A hilly expanse. Grass grows across it in dry yellow tufts. Juliet Stevenson, Lee Ingleby, and Greg Wise. Bare trees with spindly branches are reflected in the water of a stream. Ripples move across the surface. The water runs down dark stones in a waterfall. Light filters in through an archway in a pitch dark, watery cavern. Place of execution. Screenplay by Patrick Harbinson. Adapted from the novel by Val McDermid. Executive producers Sandra Jobling, Robson Green. Produced by Philip Leach. Directed by Daniel Percival. An old rotary phone rings on a desk as two police officers drag a man in. In a modern station...
Yeah, custody desk. Yeah, about an hour ago. Yeah, okay. Catherine Heathcote?
Yes.
You take a seat, please. Would you bring Sasha Heathcote in, please? She's here.
The police officer hangs up. The woman steps back.
You pulled some strings. Chief Constable, no less.
Yeah, and he wanted to know what you're doing, keeping a 15-year-old in the cells overnight.
She was drunk out of her skull and wouldn't give us her name. Maybe this'll scare some sense into her.
The neat, blonde, middle-aged woman, Catherine, rolls her eyes at the officer and takes a deep breath. The girl, Sasha, is let out into the reception. Dark, lank hair frames her pale face. Outside...
Sasha! Sasha! What possessed you? Smashing windows!
Sorry I inconvenienced you.
I'm talking about you. Vandalising shopping malls. I mean, criminal damage. That'll be on your record now. Do you know that?
I know.
Any university.
I know. But I'm such a disappointment.
Catherine draws a sharp breath and looks down.
Look, I'm terribly late for a screening now. Take a cab home and get some rest.
She hands her a banknote.
Which home? Dad's or your flat?
Dad's. Oh, God, no. He's at the airport already, isn't he? Well, Gran's then, eh? Go to Gran's, and I'll see you there tonight.
Sasha fights back tears.
You all right?
Sasha gives a little nod. Blinking, she turns away and heads off. Catherine watches her.
Sasha?
Sasha turns back. In her mind's eye, Catherine sees a grainy image of a similar-looking girl with long, dark hair also turning back. She wears a similar coat.
What?
Catherine stares, almost entranced, then cocks her head.
Go to Gran's. Won't you?
Sasha looks Catherine up and down, bitter disappointment in her eyes, then heads off again. On a desk, the old rotary phone rings. An officer in old-fashioned police uniform answers it.
Hello, Morse Police.
Listen, I need help. My daughter's missing. She took the dog for a walk and she's not come home.
All right, lass, let's keep it calm. How long's she been gone?
More than 4 hours.
What's her name?
Alison Carter. She's 13. I'm Ruth Carter.
I'm in Hawking. We live at the Manor House in Scardale.
All right, Mrs. Hawking, we'll have someone out there right away.
Who was that?
A girl from Scardale, sir. Took her dog for a walk, hasn't come home.
How old is she?
13, sir. How long has she been missing?
Several hours.
The plainclothes officer checks his watch.
I'll take that. I'll go myself.
A suited man frowns.
Why would you do that, sir?
I don't like the idea of a young girl missing out on the moors.
Not with night coming on.
Just a young lass having a snug with a boyfriend.
Nonetheless, I'm going to go myself.
Aye. Just get me killed, then.
No, you don't have to come, Sergeant.
Can't have you getting lost on the moors too, sir. Not with night coming on.
They drive along a road through the moors in a police car. On TV, an old man speaks. A caption reads, George Bennett, Chief Constable.
What made you decide to go out personally that first day, discard it?
I don't really know. Maybe it was the name of the village, Scardale. Like two halves that didn't quite fit together. Scardale.
Were you worried immediately that first evening about Alison?
Yes, I think I was. 13-year-old child.
A man watches. Catherine enters.
You feel protective. You want to find out what's happened. Hope that nothing bad's happened.
One afternoon, just before Easter, in 1963, 13-year-old Alison Carter walked out of her home and simply disappeared. It happened here, in the tiny moorland village of Scardale. The story of Alison's disappearance transfixed the nation and was to become one of the most controversial cases of the era.
On screen, a smartly dressed Catherine walks past a stone war memorial on a village green. The police car pulls up in a village next to the same war memorial. Several villagers stand outside their houses. The young George Bennett gets out of his car, wearing his thick framed spectacles, then glances around. The tall, heavy-set DS Tommy Clough gets out of the car too. They spot an older woman and a younger man nearby. George addresses Tommy.
Where's the manor house?
It's up there.
Tommy gestures and they head towards a huge stone manor house surrounded by bare winter trees.
Has Alison ever stayed out this long before?
Never.
When was the last time you saw her, Mrs. Hawkins?
She came in off the bus about 3 o'clock. She put a coat on, took the dog and went.
And did she say anything?
Hi, Mum, bye, Mum.
I do hope this isn't all a fuss about nothing.
I hope it is, sir.
You know what I mean. Alison often takes the dog for a walk.
Are you the father?
Yes. Stepfather.
In an airy sitting room.
Did she have a usual walk?
Yes, I can take you.
Darling, you should stay here in case she comes back. I'll show them.
Did you take these, Mr. Hawking?
Yes.
Is this Alison?
Ruth nods.
Would you mind if we borrowed this photograph? Or we'll need to make some copies.
Would you like me to do that? I have a dark room.
Oh, I see. Yes, that'd be very helpful indeed. Swindles?
A group of police officers.
This photo of the missing girl, her name is Alison Carter. I want you to make sure that everybody gets a good look at her.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
It's Miller, sir. And Satan. This is Satan.
Well, the day I could have worked that out for himself, Miller. You went to university, didn't you?
Yes, right. I'm going to interview some witnesses, OK? Better get started.
Right. And what about the dog?
What?
The dog.
Yes, to the dog.
You know, well, it might need something of Alison's, if you want him to track her, that is.
Yeah. Right, with me.
Tommy shakes his head disdainfully as George walks away. Ruth leads George and Miller into Alison's bedroom and switches on a lamp.
What do you need?
Anything she's worn recently, no?
Ruth picks up a pair of pyjamas from the bed.
Aye, there you are. Hey, Satan. What's...
Satan sniffs the pyjamas. George studies objects on a shelf, a picture of horses and a couple of small trophies. His eyes run over the room, soaking up the detail. Ruth's brow is furrowed with anxiety.
Sir, it started snowing.
Outside, snow falls between thin trees. A group of police officers set out with torches, Miller and Satan at the front. The dog sniffs along the ground, leading them.
Alison!
The Alsatian trots along, sniffing, while officers flash their torches around.
Alison! Alison!
In a living room, two officers interview a boy with his mother.
So you and Alison were on the school bus, Charlie?
Yeah. Mum picked us up at bottom of the hill. It was me, Ali and Janet Crowther. We came back here. We went to our homes and I helped Ma with tea.
Not me, his grandma. Ma Lomas.
Can you think of any reason why Alison might have run away?
Charlie and his mother shake their heads.
No.
No? Does Alison have a boyfriend, Charlie?
No, look. Can I go now? Help him search?
Not yet, no. We just want to ask you a few more questions.
We found Ollie's dog!
George runs through the woodland.
Back! Back! I want everybody back! This is a crime scene! Why didn't you keep him back?
I did keep him back. The dog's over there.
I'm scared stiff, sir. Somebody's tied up its muzzle.
Right.
George peers at the sheepdog, which sits by a tree.
And where does the trail lead from here?
Well, doesn't it just stops?
George nods, frowning. He approaches the dog tentatively.
Hey. Oh, there's a good lad. There we go, there we go.
He pets the dog.
There's a good lad. Let's get this off. Shh, it's all right. It's all right, there we go. Good lad. Right, I need a knife.
Yeah.
He removes the muzzle and takes the knife.
All right, stand back.
He holds the rope that tethers the dog taut and cuts it, leaving a short bit as the lead.
Where is she? Hey?
He strokes the dog.
Where's Alison?
Snow is still falling through the dark night. At the police station...
Swindles, what's going on with these phones? Come on, son, I need this one set up as soon as possible for the DI's use only, OK? I don't want to see anybody else using it, OK? Get it out of dust.
A man hobbles in on crutches.
What the...
DI Bennett. There's a chair, sweetheart.
George strides over to the man, DCI Culver.
What the hell's going on?
We're setting up an incident room for the missing Alison Carter case.
Case? You don't even know there's a crime. Lass has just run off with her boyfriend. She's vanished into thin air, sir.
And we found a dog tied to a tree with its muzzle taped.
Could be another reason. No cause to go squandering resources.
Small, slight George hangs his head and gives his hat to burly Tommy. He picks up a photo of Alison and shows it to Culver.
She hasn't got a boyfriend, sir. Not as far as we know. I think she's in serious trouble. And I think we should do everything we can, even if we turn out to be wrong, sir.
Culver examines the photo tight-lipped, then looks at George.
OK, clever clogs, it's all yours.
Thank you, sir.
George takes back the photo.
Crutches.
Tommy picks up Culver's crutches. George sits at a desk and stares at the photo of pretty dark-haired Alison while sucking on a cigarette.
Never been able to get her face out of my head.
On the TV screen, the photo of Alison.
But there was something about those eyes. Seemed to look right into you. So vulnerable. I think I decided I wouldn't give up until I found her.
A woman opens the door.
Do you still carry her face? Sorry, Keith. Call for Catherine.
Tell him she'll call back.
It's George Bennett.
Tell him she'll call back.
Oh, no. I've got to talk to him. Sorry, Keith.
She hands Catherine a phone.
Line two.
Thanks. George, hi, it's me. Listen, have you managed to get permission for us to film inside the manor? Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I can't believe it. First of all, let me thank you very, very much for helping to get Sasha out of the police cells last night.
I'm pulling out of the film.
Catherine's eyes dart about.
Catherine. You hear me?
Catherine has a sharp intake of breath.
Well, you can't. You've signed a release.
The film's not going ahead with me.
And without me, you don't have a film.
Catherine sits down, open-mouthed.
George, what's going on? Why are you doing this?
Because it'll do more harm than good.
What do you mean?
What harm?
Mistakes were made.
What mistakes?
George, listen, I think that we ought to meet.
George hangs up his phone. He's sitting in a car parked at the side of a road running through the moors. Catherine keeps the phone to her ear. The other rosy-cheeked woman, Nicola, glances at her.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Very good. All right. Bye.
Catherine hangs up and bites her lip.
George, okay? He sounded a bit upset when I answered.
Catherine stares ahead thoughtfully, then smiles.
Yes, he's absolutely fine.
He's not gone wobbly, has he? He screw us at the last minute.
Oh.
Catherine and Nicola re-enter the screening room.
In the end, I can't help wondering if the deepest wounds still remaining from the Alison Carter case lie in the heart of George Bennett.
On screen, George is on the moors.
Yep. Good.
But...
Keith frowns.
Doesn't have your usual edge. Look, I'm not saying it's a bad film, it's just not a particularly controversial one.
Well, it's not finished.
Is there a problem?
No, no problem. But I still want to get inside the manor house. You know, we need to see where Alison lived. You know, reconstruct some scenes.
Yeah, the owners live in Canada. They haven't responded to any of our calls.
And I want to try and interview him one more time.
Because?
You know, I just think I could push him a bit harder on one or two things.
You do know we have to deliver this thing by the end of next week.
Yeah, I'm only asking for 3 days.
Yep. Okay, just give me a second. You've got two. And if you don't get permission to film in the manor, do it somewhere else, okay?
Thanks, Keith.
Okay.
Catherine, what is going on with George?
Oh, just nerves.
Then why were you asking him about mistakes?
Nicola, your priority is to get us into the manor house.
Catherine leaves.
Mum, Sasha with you?
Yeah, oh, good. No, I couldn't. Because I'm at work.
Catherine's in a study full of folders.
The Alison Carter case launched George Bennett's career. He was to become Chief Constable of Northern Ireland, Chair of the Bradford Riots Inquiry, and Head of the Bosnian War Crimes Commission. That rare policeman who is trusted by every community, at home and abroad.
The young George chews his finger.
He's too embarrassed to come home. So get the message out. What we want is Alison back home safe and sound.
You don't think she's been kidnapped?
You think a kidnapper would hang around a place as isolated as Scardale?
Who's running this case, Detective Chief Inspector?
The Ide Bennett is. And it's a search, not a case.
What do you think's happened to the girl, Inspector Bennett?
I don't speculate.
Listen to the Professor, Don Smart. You might learn something. Right, that's it for now. Back to work, everyone.
As people leave, Tommy rushes over to Culver and George.
Tommy.
Found something, sir, in the woods.
In the daylight, an officer leads George and Tommy along a bank of the stream.
Stay, sir.
Stay back, son. Stay back.
They peer at something clinging to twigs in the undergrowth. George removes his glasses.
Those tights?
Yeah.
It's a pair of white tights. George looks up.
Look. Look.
Some long brown hairs are caught on the bark of a tree.
It's hair.
Yeah, what's that, sir?
Where?
Oh, there.
They find a small black plastic object with two holes in it on the leafy ground. At the manor house...
We found this.
He slides the object to Ruth's husband, Hawking, across the table. He picks it up.
It looks like it's from Alison's duffel coat.
Hawking looks down, teary-eyed.
And we also found this.
He opens a cloth with the tights inside.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to look at Alison's clothes.
In Alison's bedroom, Ruth opens a sock drawer. George lays out the tights from the woods on Alison's bed. Ruth lays another pair of very similar tights next to the others. She stares at the two pairs on the bed, running her hand across the pair from the drawer, then the laddered, ragged pair from the woods. Slowly, she turns to George, her mouth agape and her eyes full of horror.
I wouldn't worry. Thousands of girls must have tights like these.
They each pick up their respective pairs of tights, a look of deep concern flashing across George's face. Catherine's in her study. A box file lies open on the floor with black and white photos and notes on the case.
Did you tell her immediately that you found what you found, or did you hold back for her?
Well, up to that point, I think I still hoped. Hoped that she'd, just walk back in and say the whole thing had been a mistake.
Catherine watches a clip of George on her computer.
Walk back in and say the whole thing had been a mistake.
Mistakes were made.
Catherine stares intently at her computer screen. George stares into the distance and then glances around the room. He strokes his upper lip with his finger pensively. He looks over at pictures of various men cut out of magazines and stuck up on the wall, then over at some shelves with framed photos and trophies on them. Underneath the shelves are rows of colourful rosettes. George picks up a black and white photo of Alison with some friends. A boy's face is scratched out. He goes over to the pictures on the wall and finds a note tucked behind one of them. He pulls out the note. The words are formed in a structure that looks like a poem or lyrics. He unfolds the piece of paper and starts to read.
We're all done in the woods, sir. Find anything?
Yeah. I think I might have found somebody who Alison didn't like.
He hands Tommy the photo.
I don't know who it is, though. We should find that out.
I know where's a leather jacket like that one. Charlie Lomas.
Who?
Ginger lad.
Oh, yeah. What do you think to this? She's been writing some poetry. I'm walking in the rain, tears are falling and I feel the pain, wishing you were here by me to end this misery.
Tommy smirks.
It's interesting, don't you think? Psychologically, I mean.
Come on, sir. Get with it. She didn't write it. Del Shannon did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Should we go and have a look in Charlie's bedroom, sir?
See if he writes poetry as well.
Still smirking, Tommy heads off. George frowns. Tommy peers in through glass panels on a door to a house. He pushes the door open.
Hello?
Receiving no reply, Tommy glances at George, then makes his way into the house. Hesitating outside, George looks around shiftily, then hurries in. They make their way up the stairs. The house is quite cramped and dingy. Upstairs, they both go into a bedroom, a dusty light streaming in through the window.
I don't think we should be doing this.
Door was open. Just looking for the lad.
Tommy opens a drawer and peeks into it. George draws a dagger halfway out of its scabbard. Tommy nods towards a wooden wardrobe.
Maybe he's hiding in here.
He turns a key in the lock of the wardrobe and opens the door. George studies a note. Tommy pushes clothes aside to reveal an abundance of photos of Alison tacked to the back of the wardrobe.
Bloody hell. Look at this.
George steps over to the wardrobe and pulls out a safety pin holding down two photos. He takes off his glasses for a closer look, scrutinising the black and white photos of Alison on her own.
I'll bet these were taken by Hawking.
How did Charlie get hold of them? I don't know.
Fixing on something, Tommy moves back towards the wardrobe and holds something up to George.
And how's he got hold of that?
Strands of dark hair tied to a piece of paper. They look up to see the silhouette of a young man climbing the stairs.
Hello, Charlie.
Wait, wait, wait!
Gangly ginger Charlie bolts. George and Tommy chase after him. An old woman swings her walking stick at Charlie's legs, flooring him.
Don't be a fool!
Charlie writhes on the ground. George and Tommy haul him up and the old woman looks on with relish.
Did you take these photographs, Mr. Hawking?
Yes.
Did you give them to Charlie?
He'd shown an interest in photography.
Not an interest in Alison.
You shouldn't have given them to him.
Hawking looks up, wide-eyed, at stony-faced Ruth.
Nonetheless, photographs are very useful. Do you have many others?
Hundreds. Why?
Well, whoever took Alison may have watched her for days, even weeks. And one of your photographs might have caught someone or something.
Hawking gets up, a cigarette between his fingers. George follows him out of the room but stops in a corridor admiring framed photographs of various landscapes on the wall. Hawking turns back and raises his eyebrows. He steps back and surveys the photos himself, taking a puff of his cigarette.
Very accomplished.
Thank you. I'm proud of my work.
He blows smoke through his nose and leads George into a grand wood-panelled study. Hawking rests his cigarette on the side of a glass ashtray and George glances around. There's a camera on the table. George opens the shutter on a bulkier camera. Hawking eyes him and takes out a box of black and white photos, all of Alison. George starts to look through the photos. He peers down at a close-up of Alison, then one of her leaning against a dry stone wall.
You make films too?
Hawking glances over at a Super 8 film projector.
It's a new purchase. Only one so far.
Of what?
George inspects a framed photo of a young man sitting in a car. Hawking pulls all the blinds shut as George's eyes flit over the picture. On a screen at the front of the darkroom, a countdown appears in white, then a grainy image of Alison in her duffel coat. She ambles along a country road, large white snowflakes falling around her, some settling in her hair. She glances over her shoulder coyly, then turns back and carries on walking. In the darkness, the light of the film flickers across George's face as he watches, stroking his upper lip, lost in thought. On screen, Alison turns again, looking over her shoulder. She pauses and turns back. Hawking eyes George coldly from behind. Now face onto the camera, a smile plays across Alison's rosebud lips, then she looks down at the ground. On the computer screen in Catherine's study...
She looked beautiful. She looked old. Older than her years.
Where is that cinefilm now?
Destroyed, I think. There was a warehouse fire a few months back, along with a lot of stuff from the Alison Carter case. It's a shame.
Catherine pauses the clip.
What's going on?
Oh, God. Oh, didn't know you were there.
So, what are you after?
I have got a contact number for the owners of the manor house.
We already have a contact number.
Yes, but this one's in the UK, in Morton. Want to know how I got it? I called the Mounties. The Royal Canadian Mounties.
Did you try the number?
Well, I left a message. It's an answer machine. I'll keep trying.
Good. Well done. Thanks.
Catherine turns away.
So, are you going to tell me what you're looking for?
You know that warehouse fire that destroyed the evidence? Did we check it out? See if there was any suspicion?
Why, do you think there's something...
Oh, you know, just so that we're covered.
OK, well, I'll have a look.
Thanks.
Catherine turns back to her computer and Nicola walks away. Catherine turns to watch Nicola go, then returns to her computer and presses play, her eyes wide and focused.
Fortunately, some of the film did survive the fire. Just a few seconds of Alison walking. Only a few seconds, but enough to understand why, for George Bennett, finding Alison became more than a duty, but an obsession.
In the village hall.
Why is Ali scared of you, Charlie?
She's not. We're best friends.
George stares out of a window. Tommy interviews Charlie at a desk.
Look what she did.
He puts down a photo.
It's not very friendly, is it?
Ali didn't do that. Why would she?
Maybe she heard about that little shrine in your wardrobe. Did you invite the lads around for a good perv?
No, I love Ali.
Funny thing, isn't it, Charlie? You know when love goes bad. And you love her, but you can't have her. So you do the next best thing. Make sure nobody else can have her.
I told you!
Or maybe
you can. I'd never asked her!
Over here.
The photo of Charlie's face scratched out. George and Tommy join Culver.
Has that lad got a criminal record?
No, sir.
Anyone else in Scardale?
I don't know, sir.
Yeah, well, if you checked, you'd have found that one of the Scardale mob has a record for exposing himself to little girls and worse.
Who's this?
Simon Crowther, the brother of Ruth and Dan Crowther, Alison's uncle. He lives in a hostel in Morton. So stop bullying schoolboys and pulling the knickersnipper.
A squad car speeds along.
There he is.
Narrowly avoiding another car, it pulls up by a man.
Simon Crowther!
Simon didn't...
Oh, but Simon bloody did! Oh, the only thing Simon did it was wash!
One police officer bundles Simon into the car. Sitting at a desk in a police station, the pale, drawn Simon rolls a cigarette. George and Tommy enter.
Hello, Simon. We'd like to talk to you about what you did on Wednesday afternoon in Scardale.
Simon lives in Morton. Water Swallow Lodgings, number 17. Not in Scardale.
Aye, but we know you went there Wednesday.
Simon never. Simon's not allowed.
Who says you're not allowed?
Simon hangs his head, avoiding eye contact. Tommy sits on the desk beside him and lifts his chin.
Who said Simon?
Dan. He says I go back there and cut my hands off.
Simon's a little shaky.
Can I have a fag, please?
When did I see Alison?
Don't know Alison. I know Angela. She makes fringes for the lampshade.
Alison Carter, Simon. Ruth's daughter.
Simon never... Don't know Alison.
But she goes to school in Morton. The school bus stops right outside where you work.
Ruth's your sister. You must know she's got a daughter.
Simon never. Simon never. Simon never. Simon never. Simon.
You better find out why his family kicked him out of Scardale.
Then it.
Sir, you got a confession?
No, sir.
And where are you going?
To check out his story, sir.
Where? The bloody library. He's upstairs. Check it with him.
Actually, I don't believe you did this.
Culver raises his brows.
Actually, I believe you're wrong. The man who took Alison is sitting upstairs, and you can't get it out of him because you don't know how. Keep Crowther in the cells overnight. Come the morning, I'll work on him. He'll tell me where that little girl is.
George rolls his eyes and turns away. George and Tommy head towards the door of a house. Charlie's sullen 30-something mother comes out, her arms folded, and addresses them.
You're not coming in. Not after what you did to poor Charlie.
We want to talk to my Lomas.
Well, last I saw, she was out for a walk.
Where?
Over. Same way the Squire went on Wednesday.
Sorry, Wednesday, are you sure?
Why shouldn't I be?
I understand.
Right, you two, out the way.
I want to talk to you.
I don't want to talk to you.
Just...
Help! Rape!
The same old woman that tripped Charlie up. George flinches as she shouts. She walks in.
You get a statement.
He points to Kathy, then follows Mar Lomas.
No, I want to know why Scardell doesn't care about finding Alison.
Of course we care.
Then why didn't Kathy tell me about seeing Hawking in the field on Wednesday afternoon?
Well, I would have told you if you'd asked me.
He shakes his head, frustrated.
Why didn't you tell us about Simon?
Well, he didn't do it. Simon wouldn't dare come to Scardale.
Why not?
She glances up at him wryly, then looks away. He rolls his eyes, sits down in front of her, and takes off his glasses.
In a missing child case, first 48 hours, they're the most important. After that, the trail goes cold and evidence gets lost, and whatever urge drove that kidnapper to snatch that child, that urge is satisfied. Usually on the poor child's body. After that, well, the child's just a nuisance and a liability. And they're usually killed.
She looks down.
Now, it's been 46 hours since Alison went missing, and you are still treating me like the village idiot.
Mar Lomas's eyes widen. Tommy and Kathy come back in.
Statement's done, sir.
So are we.
George gets up and storms towards the door.
Simon was mixed up from the start.
Tommy and George halt by the doorway and turn back. Mar Lomas looks away awkwardly.
He'd watch the animals at it. Lovers in the fields, folks in their bedrooms. And he'd play with himself.
What did he do to Ruth?
At first, she was just his little sister. And then she grew up. And Simon was obsessed. Made her life a misery.
What happened, Ma?
Dan Crowther caught him in Ruth's bedroom one night, standing over her cock like a broomstick.
She shakes her head.
We had to drag Dan off him or he would have killed him. He'd never come back.
George and Tommy by the manor gates.
What about Simon Crowther?
George smokes.
Do we release him?
He looks at George with a furrowed brow.
No, the police station is the best place for him.
What, even with Culver on the rampage? I say we should release him, otherwise we're going to end up with a false confession on our hands.
George scratches his forehead.
Look, let me talk to the desk sergeant. He's a pal of mine. Make it known that Simon's not a suspect and he never has been.
George closes his eyes.
All right.
Tommy pats George on the back and heads off. George frowns thoughtfully and blows out his cheeks. He gazes around, then strides towards the manor house purposefully. Ruth leads him into the dining room where Hawking is crouched at the fireplace. Hawking stands.
Inspector?
Were you out walking in the field on Wednesday afternoon, Mr. Hawking?
No, I was in my darkroom.
Two witnesses say otherwise.
Two of the yokels, you mean?
Hawkins smiles smugly.
Come on, Inspector, they hardly know one day of the week from another.
I don't think a jury would find that answer very convincing, Mr. Hawking.
Is that a threat?
I just want you to answer my question.
All right. They're lying. Because I took their most beautiful possession from them, and because, despite the money I pour into their land, their houses, they remain a narrow, mean-minded, avaricious bunch of peasants.
Were you walking in the fields on Wednesday afternoon?
No. Anyway, who do you think a jury will find more convincing? Me or a load of farm workers?
Well, round here, most juries are made up of farm workers.
He turns to George.
Really?
The two men hold each other's gaze.
I was working in my darkroom on Wednesday afternoon, as my wife will attest. Come on, darling, let's eat. You can see yourself out, Inspector.
George eyes Ruth, who turns away uncomfortably. He marches out. Ruth looks at Hawkin, who casually smokes a cigarette. She leaves. In the office, Nicola's on the phone.
Hi, I found out about the warehouse fire. Yeah, it happened in November of last year. Police suspect arson, but no one was charged.
Was all the photographic evidence burned, including the negatives?
Apparently. You don't think George Bennett might have had a hand in this?
Of course not.
But do you have doubts about the evidence?
You're sounding like an X-Files nut.
What are you going to do next?
Go north, talk to George.
About what specifically?
About filming in the manor house, of course.
What do I tell Keith?
What I just told you. Bye, Nicola.
Nicola hangs up in the dark office.
Doubts about the evidence? So what do you tell Keith?
Catherine enters a house.
Hello, Mum.
So you're planning to stay the night too?
Yeah, is that okay? I thought it might be easier. Yeah. Where's Sasha?
Gone out.
Gone out?
Only to the shops. I hear she's been suspended for a week.
Yep.
It wouldn't have happened if her father hadn't gone away, but he's the one that's usually there for her, isn't he?
Catherine laughs wearisomely.
Yeah, right. Thanks. Thing is, I've got to go north tomorrow. I've got to talk to George Bennett.
I still don't know why you're doing it.
Doing what?
This sordid little murder story.
Mum, it's not a little murder story. It's a highly significant case.
It's sordid and ghoulish. And you've always done such good work. The Middle East, Africa. Important places.
Sasha enters.
Hello, darling. Thing is, as you know, Sasha's dad has gone to Germany for a week. So what I'm asking is, could you possibly look after her for a couple of days?
Just a couple, honestly.
I'd love to. You know I would. I have my own work. I've got a deadline. And Sasha needs to be with one of her parents.
Don't worry, I'm not exactly thrilled about it either.
Mum, thing is, I've got a problem with this film.
Yeah? Dad says you're losing your edge.
Does he? Well, when your father finds his edge, let me know.
Sasha lowers her eyes and walks away. Catherine watches her go, her hard expression softening a little. At the police station...
Sir, sorry, sir, but you need to see this. Don Smart causing bother again.
Police have arrested a man in connection to missing schoolgirl Alison Carter. Sexual offences. Water swallow lodging. Simon Crowther. Shit.
George pulls up outside a block of flats where a mob has gathered. George pushes through the angry mob.
Police! Get back! Back! Move! Police!
Police are on the other side of some gates, fending off the crowd. George finds Tommy.
You said you'd sort this!
That's right!
Well, you bloody failed, didn't you? Is he in there? What the hell?
I said it! Come on!
George uses a dustbin lid to deflect glass. At her grandma's, Sasha reads on the sofa.
Right. Come on, Sash, time for bed. Can we make an early start?
I'm just reading George Bennett's file. It's boring.
You don't know anything about him?
She reads Manchester Student.
This is cool, though.
Let's see.
It's just something he did. A photo.
Oh, I see. He swapped Churchill's head for Stalin's.
Catherine studies the old student pamphlet. Her eyebrows start to lift as she stares more intently at the photo.
Up to bed, go on.
Sasha pulls a bit of a face and skulks off.
Night, Mum.
There are two photos in the pamphlet, the original and one with the heads of Churchill and Stalin swapped around.
You've found something you don't like, haven't you?
Catherine gawks at her mother, wide-eyed.
What do you mean?
Maybe you shouldn't go digging.
Catherine looks back down at the pamphlet.
But I will dig. It's what I do.
Catherine's mother, Laura, looks down, disappointed, and turns away. Catherine glances up at her. In the village hall, George scrutinises items pinned to a board, all relating to Alison's case. There's the toggle from her duffel coat. A piece of string attaches it to a photo of Alison in the duffel coat. There are lots more photos pinned to the board. Leaving Tommy to answer the phone, George continues to stare at the board. The images of the pretty young Alison flash before George, then one of Hawkin.
Sir, a body's been found on the moors.
They rush off. George and Tommy stride across the moors to uniformed officers standing solemnly by a stream. Reaching the officers, they notice Simon's corpse, stiff and pallid, still fully clothed.
Looks like exposure, sir. Simon Crowder. He must have just lay down and died.
The other officer, Swindles, along with George and Tommy, stare at the corpse. George glances at Tommy, then crouches by Simon, frothy water cascading over rocks in the stream. Tommy lumbers away. The flash of a camera illuminates George. George and Tommy sit glumly in a police car.
This is all my fault, sir. If you want me off the case, I'll understand.
I don't want you off the case, Tommy.
George hangs his head, then rummages around for something. Officers carry away Simon's corpse in a sheet.
Yeah.
He proffers a packet of cigarettes.
Go on.
Tommy takes a cigarette as the corpse is loaded into a vehicle.
Not gonna give up.
The cigarette's between Tommy's lips and George gazes at him.
Are you?
Tommy shakes his head.
Good.
George stands in front of a group in a church.
Simon died a miserable and a lonely death, and I'm sorry for that. And I'm sorry for him. But if you told us about him when Alison first went missing, a lot of time and effort would have been spared, and he'd still be alive. Now, we wasted 24 hours.
Which makes it all the more likely we're not going to find Alison until some hiker stumbles on her body months from now.
Ruth gags.
I'm calling off the search.
What? You can't!
No point keeping on. We've searched that dale from top to bottom.
Not right to the bottom, you haven't.
George and Tommy exchange glances. On the moors, George and Tommy follow a heavy-featured middle-aged man, Dan Crowther. They all wear wellies and winter coats. They approach a stone archway.
Alison!
George calls into the cavern.
How far are we from Scardale?
Not about 2 miles, the crow flies.
George heads in.
Hold on, sir. Sir, we need cavers and potholers and other like-minded lunatics. Dan, here, I'll take that up to the village hall for me. Give it to PC Swindles, OK?
Right.
Tommy hands Dan a note and Dan heads off. George comes out.
Makes me angry. Makes me want to shout. Simon Crowther, Hawkins walk on Wednesday, this. Why didn't they mention this first? What if Alison has gone in there, taken a fall and... God forbid.
George shakes his head.
Do they even care?
Their mother does.
Ruth stands on a hill nearby. It started to rain and she has her arms wrapped around herself as she gazes downwards, sad and vacant. Water runs through the cavern. Rocks jut up from the ground. Bright torches pierce the darkness as George and Tommy and a handful of cavers make their way through the labyrinthine tunnels. They wear tin hats to protect their heads. Their torches flash over the craggy walls. George leads the way down a narrow passageway. As he climbs down, he slips. George knocks a wooden support shaft as he falls. Debris showers down on him.
George! George!
George moves.
You all right, sir?
I'm all right.
George notices that his hand is covered in blood. Ah. George looks down slowly to see a pool of blood. Torn tatty and blood-stained clothes lie in a pile next to it. George reaches out tentatively and picks up an item of clothing. He holds it up so Tommy can see. Tommy's mouth is agape, his eyes filled with dread.
Time to tell Mum her baby's not coming home.
George gawps, next time on Place of Execution.
Sasha? Sash!
You want to know why I never married Catherine? Never had kids?
I mean the other story, the one that you don't want to tell. Am I right?
I can't protect you, Catherine.
Does she keep you awake at night, little Alison?
Well, you've got to tell me! What happened?
Oh, sweet Jesus.
ITFC Audio Description.